to the Greater Des Moines Partnership. My name is Jay Byer, CEO of Partnership. And for those of you who are not familiar with us, I think most of you are, we're the Regional Economic Development Organization and Regional Chamber of Commerce, helping lead economic development now in 8 counties, 23 affiliate chambers of commerce, and more than 6,000 members. And very happy to help convene this meeting today. And first and foremost, I want to applaud everyone in the room for coming together to explore potential common ground solutions to regionalize water. When you talk about regionalism, we don't do it because it's easy, but we do it because we think it's right and we think it's hard, but it's important. We've seen a lot of great successes in Central Iowa in the last 10, 15, 20 years. We've had all these really great rankings. Our collective GDP growth, our collective population growth, our collective job growth has outpaced our regional competition, Kansas City, in terms of percentages, Kansas City, St. Louis, Milwaukee, Chicago, Minneapolis, Omaha. And so there's a lot of great things that are going on. And people ask me often, what's sort of that secret sauce? What's really been driving all that economic growth? And I always say it's sort of 4 different things. And I think it really represents all of us sitting around the table and the opportunities in front of us. It's regionalism. It's our ability to work together to act bigger than we are. It's public-private partnerships. It's vision. It's vision plans, and it's leadership. And all 4 of those are represented by all of you around the table. And all of you have been a big part in terms of those successes that we've collectively been able to share. But it's really those sort of 4 things that will sort of allow us to move forward on this issue as well, too. I think we look at a lot of other examples of regionalism successes. I'd like to think that Partnership is one of those examples, the CBB, the MPO, Bravo, Metro Waste, WRA, DART, lots of others. And this is another example of a way perhaps that we can work closer together moving forward, where we can all collectively enjoy the benefits of regionalism. And again, not because it's easy, but because it's hard and because it's the right thing to do to look at the potential to do so. We've got a history of as a region to push the envelope forward, take on big challenges, and again, this is another critical step in that as well. So we're talking about regional water, this is about public health, it's about public safety, it's about economics, it's about efficiencies, it's about opportunities. So, as I'm not here because I know all the details, and we're going to hear from the steering committee about what those details can look like. We do know that to come to a solution, it's going to take lots of give and take for all of us around the table to be able to come to that common ground. But a very, very exciting opportunity, and I think we feel the partnership confident that we can find a path forward to regionalization with the facts that are in front of us, but it's going to take significant political willpower, leadership, and a lot of hard work, moving forward. So this is an important step. We look forward to learning more. We very much appreciate being invited at the table to be part of this discussion as well, too. We know you did not have to host this meeting here or to include us, but we wanted to let you know that we're very appreciative of that, and we want to help everybody to work to find those common ground solutions. So without further ado, I just want to turn the meeting over to the experts and look forward to learning with all of you.
I think you said turn it over to the experts. I found out just a few minutes ago that Steve Guerra is not able to be here today, so I'm going to kind of pinch hit for him on this little piece here. I wanted to just say a couple of things. There's a slide up here, number one, that we had 36 meetings, total 36 different meetings on this. Not everybody's been involved in every meeting. There's been 50 different leaders involved in this. And we've been working at this for, I believe it's about 17 months now. And you think after 17 months, we'd be pretty close to the end of this thing. I think we're really at the jumping in point. We've done all of the background work. Now is when the heavy lifting is really going to start after we go through this presentation here. Jay brought up a lot of good points there about why we're doing this, why we need to do this, how that relates to some of the successes that we've had as a region, and how we need to make this be another one of those successes on that list. Some of the biggest advantages or reasons to do this, one is continued supply as the metro or the area grows. We found in the past of how lack of redundancy has issues. This just adds to the redundancy that we've built since the 90s. I honestly think we're stronger as a group than we are as individuals. And then the final thing, I guess, is that no one has any information on the presentation today. There's been no handouts provided prior to this presentation. And that was intentional because we want everybody to focus on the presentation as we go step through this. And as Jay said, there's going to need to be some give and take when we arrive at actually getting our hands on this and really working to make this thing come out. So we didn't provide anything for anybody to jump ahead, look at individual communities. We want everybody to focus on the region itself and how this thing can work as a whole. The entire presentation will be available directly after the meeting here today. And then we'll wrap up with a few things after that. So if there's any questions I can answer before Jason gets started, I'd be happy to try to answer any of those. Otherwise,
okay. Well, hello, I'm Jason Baum. I'm with FCS Group. I want to introduce my two colleagues, Andrew Baker here on my left. I've got Melanie Hobart here on my right. We're all going to be presenting at different times today, and we're going to take our seats up here actually so that we're not in the way of anybody's presentation. We are very pleased to be here. This is the. The last of a number of workshops that we've been able to present at, and this, of course, is the culmination of a whole lot of work. I've been very fortunate in my life to have been involved in situations similar to this, and I can think of each and every one of those cases as I'm sitting here today, wondering, you know, how those would have turned out had some of the circumstances there been as though they are here. I think of the easy ones. We did a district consolidation in Colorado where the simple answer was we got to avoid the cost of a $25 million wastewater plant, and that saved enough money for everybody to make good sense out of it. I can think about the more complex ones where I worked with the wholesale customers in and around the city of Denver for 15 years, trying very hard to negotiate with the Denver Water Board for expanded governance in that group. The answer was no, incidentally. And I can think about times when we were dealing with $800 million, $1.3 billion worth of infrastructure that we were trying to share regionally for the benefit of economies of scale. You know, in each and every one of those cases, you could have looked at the issue of regionalization through different lenses. And I think the three pieces of the lens that are essential, regardless of what the case is do we have the infrastructure? We have to be able to provide the service. What about the governance? How is that going to work out? Governance and ownership combined, how does that work? And the economics, the business case. Is there money to be saved? If so, by whom? In every case that we look at, regardless of which lens we're looking at, the question is always the same and the answer ends up being different. It's, can it work? Can it work for us? Can it work for my community in particular? We think here in the Des Moines region there are 327 million reasons why it could work. We'll talk about that today. For about the next 90 minutes or so, if you can consider this to be our roadmap, if you will, we'll talk a little bit about why, in this case, regionalization will reduce the total cost for the whole region. Why it reduces operational risks. How it improves the ownership and governance models that currently exist. And how it provides net economic benefits for the region. Let's start by talking about how we reduce total costs for the region. Big picture findings. One of the things that we find when we look at how the regional authority works versus the status quo is going forward as you are today instead of forming this regional authority. is that you would simply spend less money on regional capacity. About $64 million less, as it turns out. Why does that happen? Well, because when we're coordinating our efforts together and our planning and our execution of the capital needs, we end up staging it differently, more moderately, more slowly over time, and we end up spending less in total on a present dollar basis. But apart from those direct cost savings that come from things like just spending less on the capital works, we get about four times that effect in what I've called second order effects. Those are really life cycle costs. So when you spend that much less on the capital facilities, you're incurring that much less in fixed operating costs and other capital related costs, things like renewal, repair, replacement, the kinds of things that all of you who have water utilities in your own communities know that you face every single day. There's never quite enough money to stay on top of all of the infrastructure all the time. But when you have less of it to begin with, the overall need is less. A little bit different example of what I'm talking about right there is if you looked at the amount of capacity that's necessary over time to meet all of the demands in the region, we end up at about the same point out in 40 years. But we can get there in a different path. We can get there more moderately, more slowly, and a little bit more methodically when we're talking about the regional authority. We start off with a pretty big savings, and you can see that gap just kind of continues as you go through the years until you get to the very end. Why is that? Because we get to coordinate with the region, with ourselves. We can match the supply and the demand, if you will, much more clearly and cleanly as a region. And we spend less money in total. This all makes sense, because if you think about what the status quo really entails, it's about several entities going out and doing what's best for them. They install capacity that they believe suits their needs, but it's actually a surplus when you look at it from a regional perspective. Under the regional authority, we can manage that surplus a lot more effectively as well. And I might add that carrying idle capacity, or surplus capacity, however you want to call it, comes at a cost. If I'm installing more capacity, I'm installing the need to spend more money on it going forward. So the things I talked about, those second order effects, O&M costs, maintenance costs, renewal and replacement costs, those things get amplified the more idle capacity we have. But idle capacity has another cost to it too, and that is all of those costs that I just mentioned, they get spread out against fewer units of service, fewer customers of the water, means that the average cost for those things is higher. And that's what we see in this regional model. So when the region spends less money supporting idle capacity, it results in higher utilization of that capacity, and that lowers the average unit cost. So we do see that happening here, and it's one of the sort of big macro impacts and the reason why we think there's so many net benefits available in the region here. Talk a little bit about operational risk. It's a term that I'm using here, and I may not be applying it totally correctly, but I think you'll get the point as I go through this. One thing that Mayor Lorenz just mentioned is this concept of reliability. Well, if you're a community right now that relies on its own plant, or a plant, or maybe a handful of plants, whatever it is, that gives you a certain layer of reliability. Assume you only have one. That means as soon as that plant doesn't work, you've got no water coming from it. Now, under the regional model, immediately upon formation of the region, you end up with a portfolio of production assets, a number of production assets that can be used if and when it's necessary to provide service, whether one is just down for regular scheduled maintenance, maybe one gets knocked out from some natural catastrophe. Either way, that exists. And those resources are then shareable by all of the members that are part of the authority, not just a handful of them. The other thing that sort of redundancy gives you at the exact same time is this ability to have operational flexibility. When you have multiple plants, and each and every plant has a certain combination of fixed cost and variable cost, what we tend to see is that the variable cost for some of these plants can become much higher depending on what the conditions are with the source water. All right, so if one of the source waters happens to be more expensive during certain times of the year or during certain conditions, then you can choose to, as a region, to change the mix of the plants that are being used to produce water so that you can effectively get a lower average cost out of all of the plants that you have. It's something like a portfolio effect, except in this way, we're talking about making water. When people think about portfolios, they often think about financial assets. It's kind of the same concept, actually. If you have a portfolio of financial assets, you've got ups and downs all around the place on your assets, but generally you want them all to go up, and you can optimize that portfolio. Same thing with these physical assets. So I've got a physical asset with a sort of portfolio of costs. It means that I have the flexibility to go and choose which ones and which combination of them will give me the best outcomes. If I only have one plant, I don't have any options. I don't have any other outcome other than whatever is dictated by conditions. So operational flexibility means the region could change the mix of plants used to produce water cheaper depending on conditions. We're going to come back to this concept a little bit later, but I want to hit on it right now, is that these things that I've just mentioned, they tend to show up as invisible benefits. And by invisible, I mean that you're not going to see them directly in our analysis. So imagine if we had an assumption that we were to use that said, well, everybody needs to have a redundancy of, you know, 2 times. We would have done a different analysis. What we've done is the status quo. If you had one plant in the status quo, then you've got one plant. If you had 2 plants, then you have 2 plants. If you had no plants, then you had no plants. But we did not factor in this. All right? So what that leads to is that there's this invisible cost there, and it's a benefit, an invisible benefit that you get from regionalizing that isn't going to be completely obvious in the analysis that we've done. What that amounts to is it leads to favoring the status quo in some cases in our analysis. And for that reason, it's important to consider that we have these unquantified benefits that are being incurred as a result of regionalizing. And we need to take that into consideration along with the quantified ones. Towards the end of our discussion, I'll come back to that point again. Talk about improving the ownership and governance models. Now, when I got started here with you, and it's been almost exactly a year to this day, it's really close to 1 year exactly, the biggest question I think that was on everybody's minds wasn't necessarily these numbers that we're going to talk about today, although that was important. At the time, it was about what kind of organization is this regional entity even going to be? And we spent a lot of time talking about that, very valuable time talking about it. And I think what came out of all of those workshops, and we did 8 of them last year, was a proposal for how this regional entity would look, how it would act, how it would be governed. These take shape in our analyses. Under the status quo, you see a collection of utilities and communities that looks a bit like this, where Des Moines Water Works is providing service to a large number of them. There's actually quite a few of them right there in the WS, which means wholesale, these abbreviations. Please excuse that. And we have some who, under the status quo, would continue getting some purchase capacity from Des Moines Water Works, but actually, in our scenario, they would produce a lot of their own water ultimately and not receive too much service from Des Moines. But under the regional authority, everything gets consolidated into one authority. And along with that comes a governance model that we're not talking a lot about here today, but that I wanted to refresh everybody's memory on, because this, again, is one of the invisible benefits that we see from regionalization. An inclusive regional governance, it's very much fashioned right now under the proposal that's sitting there, it's draft, is very much around the DART model, as some of you are very much aware of. And in that model, anyone who's receiving a direct service from the authority would have a seat on the authority's board, to kind of summarize it. There's also some other nuances there I'm not going to get into today, but the difference is pretty clear. The regional model does provide shared ownership and shared governance over the crucial water production assets. Again, all of the assets become part of this authority, and the governance is shared at that point. Along with that shared ownership, though, comes some shared responsibilities. And what we're going to find as we go through these analyses and findings today is you get some upward push on costs in some areas, and a lot of that upward push, as we'll see, is going to come from this shift in ownership. you go from being a non-owner or a renter almost into being a partial owner, and along with that comes a different expectation. Under the status quo, to totally oversimplify this, the Des Moines Water Works, which has most of the assets involved here, owns and incurs all the costs of putting those facilities in place, coming up with the financing in order to do that, and incurring all the operating costs. Some of those costs get passed on to wholesale customers based on a proportionality of how much they're using, what their demands are, and so forth. And the residual, whatever is not paid by all of those wholesale customers, ends up being absorbed by Des Moines Water Works and its retail and total service customers. But when you go to the regional model, there is no residual cost. Anything that the authority incurs is going to be allocated out to the members. There's not going to be anybody standing behind there to absorb those costs. It has to be absorbed all by the members. And that actually is a pretty important shift for many of the communities that we're going to be talking about today. It just is a fundamental difference in the way that costs get shared in a system that is joint ownership as opposed to single ownership. So changing that ownership model does shift responsibility for production costs from a single owner, which is mostly Des Moines Water Works in this case, not totally, but mostly, to multiple co-owners of those facilities. And I want to tell you how growth is a factor in what we've done as well. One of the questions among the steering committee and the group has been, how is it that the authority would go about paying for the cost of growing into the future? And the answer that we proposed and what we've used in our analysis is, well, we're going to allocate those costs based on the rate of growth that we're seeing from the communities in question. And we have a long-range demand forecast that gives us a pretty good idea of what's expected. We've used that long-range forecast, planning forecast, which was not done by us, it was done by consulting engineers for Des Moines. And came up with these sort of average growth rates over time. This is just really meant to give you an idea of who's growing faster and who isn't. The point of this, though, however, is that we look at growth as the need to expand capacity in the region, and we actually more than double the expansion of that capacity between now and 2060. So imagine going from where we're at now in terms of capacity to more than double that. So who pays for that? Right now, it's sort of less clear in our analysis, for the region at least. Those who grow the fastest end up paying proportionately more for those growth costs, and that becomes a driver for a number of them in our analysis. So in the regional model, if you have higher growth, you're going to get allocated more of the growth-related costs. That becomes part of our results. And now we've come to the part where we want to talk about the net economic benefits that are available. This is really the sort of meat and potatoes of what we've been doing for the last couple of months, few months, 4 months. It seems like it's been a long time now. I know my team over here is very excited to get these out to you, and I'm going to have them present them here in a minute. But first, I'm going to cover a couple of big picture things. There is a big picture here that we shouldn't lose track of as we're going through the individual results. We're going to circle back to it in the end, but we're going to talk about net costs and net benefits here, and the net benefits are about $544 million in net benefits. We see about $217 million in net costs, leaving a net benefit of $327 million for the region to work with. So don't lose sight of this big picture. The rest of this, I'm going to turn over to Andy first and then to Melanie, and we're going to present each of the communities and what we found in each case. Come on over there. There's your cue.
Excellent. So we've been talking about a lot of the regional implications, and to start talking about the dollars, we need to give you a little bit of how we got to where we are with this, with the analyses that we did. So, in terms of context for the folks who haven't been through this whole process, we started back in September 2017 with eight workshops covering all of the areas of structure and governance. In April, we started phase two of this analysis, and this is where we went through the process of solicited from you all as much information as we could get about what makes up that status quo that Jason's been talking about, because we wanted to really understand what goes into what you're planning to do today. And that involved, so we relied in great part on a long-range plan that was developed by HDR, but that was developed a couple of years ago, and so we have incorporated updates to those planning planning information from any of you all who had updates to that. And then all of the data that we could about your current operational costs, your current plans for future capacity expansion, and that made the baseline for our analysis. In June, we shared with you the preliminary results of that status quo scenario, and at that time also made adjustments to the status quo to revise some of those assumptions, because based on seeing not many entities go through a planning process that's looking out 40 years in advance, and when we shared with you those findings, there were a number of adjustments to that status quo in the context of really looking long-term about what's going to make sense still under the status quo to get to a baseline that was reasonable for all of the members or all of the communities. In July, we spent a very fun meeting talking about how the cost sharing under the authority would work in terms of how app costs would be allocated. Since not all of you were here for some of these, if there are things that we cover in the rest of the meeting today that you need clarification on, please let me know. We want this to be as informative as we can with the time that we have today. So if there is something that isn't making sense, either if you were here and it still doesn't make sense, or if you weren't here for one of the prior workshops, speak up, let me know. We want this to be useful for you all. That's what has gotten us to today. So, the first thing to understand is that the benefits that we see under our regional scenario are unevenly distributed. And there are a couple reasons for that. So, there are some entities who have a net cost, the economic benefit, which is really the output of what all of our modeling has been looking at, but have, when it comes to those unquantifiable considerations related to governance, may have a decrease in their outcome. There are some entities who have both a net benefit and increased governance. There are some entities who have a net cost, but do benefit from some of those unquantifiable benefits. And there aren't any entities who are seeing both decreased governance and a net cost. So what are the reasons for some of these differences? So the increased governance is just simply the change in going from being a customer with a wholesale relationship to Des Moines Water Works to being a member of an authority that has a voting stake in decisions made. On the cost, it really depends on both the specifics of each entity's status quo, what they're planning to do in the next 40 years, as best as we've been able to model it, and what their specific circumstances are related to demand and growth and peaking, and what they have in terms of their existing assets that has a bearing on what their cost would be under the regional authority. So, with those groupings, this is how, purely from a net cost standpoint, the outcomes of the comparison between the status quo and the regional scenarios fall out. These are expressed on a net present value basis. So the total cost difference between the status quo scenario and the regional scenario over the 40-year projection timeline that we're looking at, brought back to today's dollars, so we can all think of it in numbers that are consistent, And all of those over the entire duration annualize back to present day. So there's a big range of outcomes, and we're going to dive into each of these individually. And we'll try to explain what's causing the outcome. And I want you to keep in mind that these are all driven by the underlying assumptions that we have in terms of what's going to happen with each member for their peaking, for their growth. So how that's going to be met under the status quo scenario and how it's met under the regional scenario is different, but what is going to happen in terms of what is needed, what the demands will be on whatever system that entity is connected to, is the same under both scenarios. And we've applied everywhere where we can the same assumptions about cost escalation, financing, how much it will cost to operate specific projects, and how much it will cost to construct new capacity. So all of those, as much as we can, have been brought together to be consistent between the scenarios. So what falls out is things that are fundamental underlying differences in what needs to happen under a status quo, or how those costs are shared to different entities under the status quo or under the regional authority. Any questions on that before I dive into this? Yeah. So, first of all, you know, these mixed results were expected. When at any time that we're running through something that is based on a cost allocation, there will be differences to what is happening actually at present. So this wasn't a surprising outcome for us. Everyone's starting from a different point right now. And each member has a different future circumstances, and you'll see that we come back to growth being a significant driver of different outcomes throughout this. And then under the regional authority analysis that we have done, our focus is on cost. And so the outcomes that we show here are based on the cost that is attributable to each member. They do not necessarily translate to exactly what a rate would show up, because that's sort of beyond the scope of what is said just through our financial analysis. So the first grouping of members that we're going to go through are the ones that were in that green category. So those are ones who have both an increase in their governance under the scenario and a net benefit from a cost perspective. And the ones who fell under that are Grimes, Urbandale, and Joaquin. And the big reasons on why these entities have benefited from this are that they, in general, all benefit from an improved economy of scale and cheaper production costs under the regional authority. And that, in addition to that, there are some just fundamental cost savings in the regional model that they benefit from that aren't there in the status quo scenario. Melanie's gonna walk you through each of these individuals.
All right, we're gonna start with Grimes. Grimes is the easiest one to show and a good place to start to understand what you're gonna be looking at. In the top left, that's your net present value. So that means that the regional scenario, the projected cost of water over the next 40 years is $92 million cheaper than in the status quo. With Grimes, this is pretty simple. Grimes has your own production. It's more expensive than the regional average. It's more expensive to produce water in Grimes in the status quo, therefore their status quo scenario is going to be more expensive long term. As we go through the forecast, the region does provide greater economies of scale. They're sitting on less idle capacity. And then last, you know, Grimes is one of the faster growing communities in the area, but even with that taken into account, it's still cheaper under the regional model. Okay, a little bit harder for the next one. The next one we're going to look at is Urbandale. It's actually quite similar to Grimes in that in our status quo scenario, based on conversations with Urbandale, we are assuming that they would build their own facility and no longer purchase water from Des Moines. Because of that, their projected facility is, you know, it's $161 million more expensive for them in the status quo scenario than in the regional. And it's similar to Grimes in that the cost of producing the water is just higher. Initial capacity as well, initial building of the capital, as well as kind of the long-term operating costs of the facility. So that's Urbandale. We're gonna get even a little bit more complicated with this next one. Waukee in our status quo would be $25 million more expensive than in the region. You can see that, well, for Waukee, our status quo is that Waukee and West Des Moines would build a joint facility of their own to support their needs, support 100% of Waukee's needs. You can see in the short term, that's great. It's cheap. It's a cheaper facility than the regional average. The cost to produce water is less in the short term. In the long term, as the facility gets sized up to meet all the needs, it does get more expensive to produce water in the status quo than it would in the region. The result of this is that overall, in the 40-year projection period, Waukee does see a net benefit of $25 million. Okay, so those are the three easy ones. Let's move on to kind of the next big grouping. The next grouping is this group that has increased governance, but at a net cost to and net present value cost. So you can see this is the majority of entities in the region, and they're all for different reasons. The biggest reasons are just the cost of ownership. You know, when you're taking on the ownership of the region, you take on additional costs of owning the facility versus just purchasing water. Many of these communities are faster growing. If you have either a higher peak factor or a higher growth rate, you're going to see increased costs in the region because of the way that we've allocated costs. And then there's also differences because some communities have are either contributing assets or have made financial contributions to the existing system. Others have not. So everybody's starting from a slightly different footing. And then, you know, this goes back to the idea of the invisible benefits of ownership, of control over kind of decisions in the region going forward to keep in mind when we look at these. I'm just going to walk you through the first one. That's West Des Moines. West Des Moines is similar to Waukee in that in the status quo, they're building their own facility to cover their needs. It's a little bit different, as you can see. West Des Moines has existing production that is cheaper than the regional average. So when you average that out, when you kind of flip that together, the status quo is a little bit $1 million less expensive than the region. In this case, you know, it's important to keep in mind kind of the overall scale. The projected 40-year cost for West Des Moines is $900 million. So this is less than 1% of those costs. It averages out, you can see that it shifts over long term, so short term cost savings in status quo. As you size up the facility, similar to Waukee, the regional scenario becomes more cost effective. Right?
Yeah.
All right, again.
I'll jump in. I can
give you a stare here.
Do those make sense before I jump in?
Those were the simplest ones.
Yeah.
So.
Well, yeah. All of these scenarios have some complexities to them, but let's keep diving in here. So with the next one here, Polk City. For Polk City, there is a net cost of $3.1 million, and so that means, again, the status quo is cheaper by $3.1 million net present value. Overall, and you can see it from the detail of the lines, the region and the status quo scenarios are similar. It's crossing between the two sort of throughout the projection period. In the later periods here, there is a built-in benefit in the status quo scenario that's a function of the timing of when capacity gets built. Because the Des Moines under the status quo scenario is building less capacity itself because of individual members building more, there is a cost savings that appears for about a 10-year period out here in 2050. Don't quote me on exactly when that will happen, if any of you are around in 2050. But because of that timing issue, there's a 10-year window when the status quo scenario dips down, and that is the major areas of difference between the two scenarios that's driving the outcome in terms of a difference between on a net present value basis.
And that's a pattern you're going to see over and over again as we go through this.
Yes, because for all of the following entities here, they are purchasing significant amounts or all of their water from Des Moines, and so that dynamic is reflected for all of them in the status quo scenario. So for Altoona, for context, Altoona has some existing production, some existing purchase capacity, but is going to be relying on water at the wholesale rate. The regional cost, the regional scenario is more expensive by $7 million than the status quo scenario. And it's, again, it's initially more expensive due to that shift in ownership costs. That's the biggest upfront difference. And that's a function of the just taking on the cost of responsibility for repair and replacement, depreciation on all of the existing assets that they would be a joint owner of. In the status quo, Altoona also constructs its own capacity at a lower cost than the regional average. And this is the result is that their status quo scenario, while we see a spike right here when they construct that additional capacity, the unit cost of that is still significantly lower than what it costs the region to produce each unit of new capacity. So they benefit throughout this initial period from that lower cost. They're carrying less total investment in the capacity to serve them. Towards the end of the scenario, they only have capacity to benefit from that lower construction cost for the initial needs. And out here, the construction for additional capacity is, we've assumed, is at the same cost as what it costs the region. And so when you get into that period, it ends up costing more because they don't benefit from the same economies of scale that the region is able to have. Even though the construction cost itself is the same, they end up having to carry more idle capacity, as we've seen with other entities. For Warren Rural, it's a relatively simple scenario here where the regional costs are mostly driven by just the shift in ownership model. The past contributions do help bring down the regional cost that is allocated to them, but the shift in allocation of costs leads to the regional scenario being a net cost higher of $7.3 million over the status quo. For Ankeny, in the short term, costs are very similar. It's not until the out years where we see significant separation between the costs in the status quo and regional scenarios. That same built-in benefit in the latter years due to difference in the timing of capacity investments is a component in the outcome here in our in the $19 million, $18.9 million difference between the status quo and regional scenario outcomes. And yeah, so that's the delta here is really being driven by, is really the driver on that $18.9 million difference. Now we're getting the ones that have even more significant cost outcomes in terms of relative to the status quo and the regional. So Norwalk sees an increase in total cost of $14.3 million under the regional scenario. In the short term, the costs are pretty similar. as we saw with Anthony just there. That built-in benefit does play a role in that cost difference. But a major piece of why this cost is so different is the demands that are associated with serving Norwalk. So you can see that there is an increasing slope here with the regional cost, and that's because of an increasing allocation of the cost of growth to Norwalk that isn't reflected under the existing cost of service methodology that makes up what they pay under the status quo. With Clive, we see a really stark difference, and this is a useful one to illustrate. So with Norwalk, growth was a big component of it. With Clive, Clive does not have a significant growth rate, but they do have significant peaking. And under the cost allocation framework for the regional authority, peaking cost, that is the difference between their max day demand and the therefore the total amount of facilities that have to be constructed and maintained to serve that peak, are much higher than their average day demand. And that's the number of units that we are dividing into the total cost. And so as a result of that, communities like Clive that have a high peaking factor see a shift in the regional cost that is significant and continuous. Our assumption is that from that regional demand projection is that that high peaking factor will remain. And so throughout the duration of the authority, we see this separation between the regional and status quo scenarios because of that higher allocation of cost. Another point there is that all of the status quo costs that are reduced down here, so a lot of this difference is, and what we see here in 2045, is a shift from 2020 to 2045, Clive benefits from paying the Des Moines purchase capacity rate, which is very favorable. In 2045, our assumption is that those purchase capacity agreements expire, and Clive would then go to paying at the with storage rate. And so that's what that spike in 2045 is. The next entity that has a significant cost difference is Johnston. So this is a little bit of a flip. So Clive is paying until 2045 100% at the purchase capacity rate. Johnston right now and throughout our scenario is paying at the with storage rate. The regional costs are then here very close, right? Because right now they're paying a rate that isn't at that relatively favorable purchase capacity rate. As we go on though, the peak demand that is associated with Johnston keeps the regional rate up quite a bit higher, and so when this dip happens that we've seen in all the status quo, there is a significant difference in what Johnston would be paying under the regional authority model versus the status quo in those years. And that's driven really, this is kept high because of the allocation of costs based on the peak demand. With Bondurant, there is again a significant and almost constant separation between the two scenarios. The regional model is allocating more costs to Bondurant than they currently pay under the status quo model. You can see there's a slight increase in the status quo rate over the first 20 years of the analysis. That's because of a shift from benefiting from the purchase capacity rate to having to pay the with storage rate. So by the time you get out to 2035, a significant portion of the total purchased water is going to be at that higher purchase, or that higher with storage rate. And that's why that's climbing up closer and closer to where the regional cost is. But over time, we see that the regional model allocates the cost of growth. Bondurant has one of the higher growth rates throughout the region. The cost of meeting that additional capacity is allocated to them in the regional model, and that's why we see a continuing trend going out of a greater amount of cost and greater separation between the two scenarios. This is even more stark with Xenia. Xenia, again, has both of those things going. So not only one of the higher growth rates within the region, but also a very high peaking factor. Tied for the highest peaking factor. And so over time, whereas for all of the preceding communities you've seen, either they have a high peaking factor but relatively low growth, or high growth but a relatively low peaking factor, Xenia is one where based on the projection data that we are relying on for our analysis, their max day demand actually increases at a faster rate than their average day demand. And so that peaking factor is getting more extreme as time goes on. So the allocation not just of growth-related capital costs, but also their share of the ongoing operating costs is significantly higher at the end of our scenario under the regional cost-sharing model. And that's what drives this $70 million difference between the status quo, in which those costs, peaking particularly, aren't shared out to the individual members. All right. So the last entity that we'll talk about here and that has a very different outlook because of their different stage is Des Moines Water Works. They're in the blue category of seeing, they're the only ones who has a decrease in their ownership model. But they do see a significant net increase in the net benefit from a cost perspective. And again, that's driven by shifting the cost of ownership along with the benefit of that governance onto other members reduces their cost burden. And under our regional model, the cost and value of those assets is spread based on the actual need for those. And so that's really, let's dive into the details for us.
Perfect. So it's kind of the same story you've heard. Des Moines has both a really low growth rate, which is why you see that regional line is pretty flat compared to the region, and a pretty low peaking factor as well. So you're not seeing that slope in the regional costs the way that you do in some of the other communities with higher growth rates. On top of that, in the status quo, costs are going down over time. The key story here is the regional. When they share the cost of those, of maintaining and operating those assets, when because they're contributing their assets, they do get a credit for those in terms of how the rate is calculated in the regional. They also take on their share of costs, of course, like everybody else. But in the region, you know, that sharing of the costs, that burden of ownership, is reduced. And Des Moines really sees a very clear, large net benefit of $265 million. And again, that's the total cost over 40 years projected in the two scenarios. There. A lot of information we just threw at you. Pass
So that was a whole lot of information that you got in a very succinct short period of time. One of the things that you needed to gain from all of that discussion just now was that the manner in which we had to conduct this analysis was such that we followed some very strict rules in how all the costs got put where they are and why. And they were followed the same in every single case. We can't do it any other way because you wouldn't be able to compare the results if we had. But it's important to remember that the rules have taken us to a certain place. And where that place is right now, in case you wanted to do the math as we were going along, I've done it for you. It's roughly $544 million that was on the plus side. It was $217 million that was on the downside. Well, that leaves us with a lot of room to work. And where that room is going to work is by not strictly interpreting the rules that we use in our analysis. I can't put it any more simpler than that. That if you want this to work, it's going to require those who are going to receive most of the benefits from regionalization to share them a little more widely. We think that there are a number of ways in which that could work for you. And you have plenty of room in which to work. I think that's the good news in all of this. Certainly for individual entities, the long list that Andy went through, going towards regionalization has some hazards to watch out for. There's really no question in our minds that that's true. When you go from one set of rules to another set of rules, you end up with a different outcome. And what we would suggest here is that you look at levelizing this just a bit. You can at least make the other members of the region indifferent, meaning that they have no cost and no benefit towards going towards regionalization by sharing about $217 million of the 544 that are there. Now, how you go about doing that and what exactly we do for that is sort of less important than the concept itself, because there's multiple ways that that can be done. Many multiple ways that it can be done. But it definitely will entail sharing those benefits for the sake of keeping the region viable. Why would we want to keep the region viable after all? Well, because there's $327 million in net benefit there, for one. Two is we gain a lot of those invisible benefits that aren't even showing up in those numbers. Okay, and I'm going to come back to that. I told you I'd come back to it, and I'm starting to now. There's four members who are enjoying this amount right here. As we said, unevenly distributed benefits. And if they shared this amount right here with the rest of the region, everyone else in the region would break even, and those four members still would come out with a net benefit. Again, that's only one way to look at it. But I think important that you know that there's enough there to work with that it could be done. One way in which that could be done in a very simple way would be to use the authority's rate-making authority to change the rates a little bit for those customers who are on the net cost side. And by a little bit, I can't tell you exactly how much that would be right now. However, that is one way in which it could be done. Another way that it could be done would be by putting money in up front. That could happen too, or a combination thereof. The door is not closed to any of those answers or alternatives. Okay. People who were in this category here, the communities who are in this category, you know, sort of looking at the net cost side of things. I think an important item to consider in all of this, and I'll get off of this again, is the unseen benefits. So one way to ask the question is, how much is it worth, if I'm in this category here, to get the kinds of regional redundancy that we talked about, to get the operating flexibility we talked about, to get the governance structure that, frankly, everyone in the room back in 2017 when we went to those eight workshops said that they wanted. So how much is that worth it? I was relaying a story to my friends, I don't remember what it was, I guess it was this morning, we're getting ready for this thing. in the long time that I was able to work with all the wholesale customers in Denver, and they worked so hard to try to get a seat, one seat, even a ex officio seat on the Denver Water Board, and were told no repeatedly. How much would it have been worth to them to have that seat? And I can tell you right now, they would have said yes to the current situation as it existed that day. It's something to think about. Not everybody gets to have this opportunity to come to the table and be at the table long term. So is it worth it? You have to answer that. But I think that's the question that's in front of you. And I told everyone on the executive committee, the steering committee, that I'd give you a snapshot of what I think the path ahead looks like should you decide to continue to move forward here. And again, you know, if you're looking for a recommendation from us, I would say there's clearly a reason to continue your discussions and your negotiations and continue moving down this path. We have beaten these numbers up in ways that I don't think many people could actually imagine. And the amount of analysis that's been done has been heroic, so much so that there's no way that we could really present it to you today within the time allotted. But we have made offers to anyone who wants to spend some more time with us to do that, and we've made several appointments already to do it, so I want to tell it to this room again. I understand the need to get more into the details. The best way to do that is to sit down with us and do it, and we are happy to do so. We've already done two or three of those reviews. So things left to do. This is not an exact picture. It's something that I came up with just to give you some just general ideas. I think on the legal front, some things that have to be thought of. This is sort of along the lines of governance, but you know, at this point, gaining some wider buy-in and wider consensus for what we're talking about here is appropriate, because the next steps that need to happen once everybody's on board is you got to move towards what we identified last year in our workshops as something that looks like a 28EF formation. There was some legal work done at that time that said that we actually might need some work on the legislative side in order to make that happen. That's probably inherent in here. But this is sort of the path, getting that wider consensus and then getting towards forming that 28ENF, and that gets you to forming this authority, which is crucial, obvious for obvious reasons. But one of the big key reasons is one of the things the authority has to be able to do in fairly short order is to be able to go out and get money in the capital markets so that we can start paying for all of this regional infrastructure. It's one of the great things about being something of an economist. They call it the dismal science. I like that. But it's not too dismal sometimes, because we can just assume away the hard stuff. We've assumed that you can get that a financing authority. This is going to take some work. And we've talked with some underwriters. We've talked with a couple of banks. You definitely have to have this put in place. But this is not undoable. This will take some lifting, but it can be done, and we've got examples of where it has been done. Get through the first round financing. We have formation transactions that need to occur. For those of you who weren't part of all of the workshops, you know, there are some things that need to be taken care of from a housekeeping point of view. This transfer of assets that we talk about, that needs to happen. There's a little framework for that. There's also a financial implication that results from that. We talked last year about how those who have what we call reserve capacity, that's capacity that is owned right now, whether it is physical assets or whether it is purchase capacity that is not being used, so it's available for others to use, that reserve capacity would be a financial transaction that the authority would enter into with the individual communities in question. There's some money involved there. And by the way, those were taken into account in our analysis as well, so we've got it all. Technical. There's a long list of things, and if you ask somebody who actually has more of an operating and technical bent than any of us up here, you'll get an even longer list than this, because nobody wants to inherit a system that has a whole bunch of problems in it that they know about in advance. And so, you know, the due diligence involved in making sure that the system is, you know, the system just issues are all known, at least transparent is important. That all needs to happen. Capital planning and execution. We've got a capital improvements plan. There's a long-range plan that goes with the authority, at least right now, as it's proposed. And those projects really need to start getting underway. When you look at the timing of the capacity additions for the very first increments, they're not distant in the future. and they're happening very soon. And, you know, not to put an unnecessary amount of urgency behind what is clearly a very important decision for everyone in this room, but those things need to happen. And we don't have too terribly long to wait. In fact, I'm sure if you asked enough people in here, they would say that some of that stuff needs to happen right now, today. So those are a few things that I think are on the big left to-do list. Nothing too detailed there. And I hope that what we've been able to leave you with here is some amount of clarity. I recognize when we start giving you those detailed results for every individual community, you see lines all over the place and graphs and things that can be confusing and things that maybe don't make immediate and obvious sense to you. And I completely empathize with that. I think what I'd like to do is bring you back to focus on some of the bigger outcomes here. One is that there are significant benefits to be had from regionalizing here in the Des Moines region. But I think what we have found through our work is that in order to realize that, in order to make it happen, it definitely will take political leadership amongst you all to make it happen. It is not a cut and dry, clear case where we have what I'd like to call a win-win economic scenario all around the board. Those are very rare. And I found one in my life. And they didn't even move forward with it. So you can even find the win-win and then they don't want to do it. All right? Here we've got a mixed bag, as we've seen. And what that means right now for you is that it will take political will and political leadership in order to make it happen. And I think there's a lot of benefit there if you do. That concludes our formal presentation. We can stand for questions. And what I would propose we do is I can take your questions. And if I need to, I'm going to call on my colleagues to actually try to answer them. Because if nothing else became clear to you during this presentation, is that these two have been completely buried in your details for the last 4 months. And I've had a relative luxury of being able to ride above a lot of that. So if you ask something that's really detailed, I'm going to put it right over here, and they're going to try to answer it. And if we can't answer your questions today, either because we don't have the information in front of us, or because it's far too complex for us to answer right now, what we would advise you to do is come see us afterwards. We will set up a time with you to go over some of these things, and hopefully that will get to your questions. So why don't I stop? And we'll take questions, and then following this, I know Jay has some concluding remarks along with Mayor Lorenz, and then I think that'll conclude our meeting. Anyone for now? Just what I thought. We slam dunked it, guys. Jay, do you want to close?
Sure. Mayor Lorenz, one point.
Well, a couple of things that I wanted to reinforce is I call this a jumping in point instead of a jumping off point. Because I don't think anybody has the information at this point to decide that they want to jump off. And then that would lead into what Jason just mentioned a minute ago, that there's, if you look at the, each community had one slide up there with a lot of information on it and a graph. And everybody provided growth scenarios, usage, a lot of different things that produced that particular slide. And I would encourage all of you that are qualified to understand the nuances of the numbers and everything to set up an appointment to, I'm not sure how you're technically going to do that, but to spend some time with FCS and understand the output that your community or your board has got from what was given to them. I think that's very important. I think that's the first thing that everybody needs to have a good understanding of before we make any kind of decision. The next thing is that the executive committee has set a date of October 17th, I believe, that we are going to have a next steps meeting. We're going to come up with, Jason outlined a few of them there. We're going to discuss those next steps and try to prioritize those next steps as to what makes the most sense and what order to take those down. And I would also suggest that you would like like I say, you'll get this presentation here in just a few minutes. If anyone has any questions about the next steps that are on the slide or has any suggestions of next steps that aren't on that slide or anything that you want the executive committee to take a look at to bring back to the steering committee, I highly recommend getting a hold of probably Laura as their best spot to start that, and that she can funnel that out to everybody else. So I think that's very critical before anybody makes up their mind that this is a good thing, this is a bad thing, we're not interested in this. I think we need to look at this long term. And then one other thing that I wanted to mention was on the graphs, if I have the colors right, the blue line showed the regional aspect of what the individual community had, and the orange line showed the status quo. And I think it's important that you understand what the status quo is. The status quo, and correct me if I'm not getting this right, but the status quo is what's happening today, providing everyone is operating under the same method with the planned capital improvements in place at the weather plan with the Des Moines Waterworks. And whether that, I can't say for sure if that included West Des Moines or not. So the status quo is, I guess, a fragile thing, in my opinion. If someone or a group of people down the road decide that they don't want to be a part of this region, that changes the whole status quo picture. So, again, that's another prime reason why you need to spend a little time with FCS to get your individual community or board members. And then the final thing, I said 17 months and Jason said about a year. I think the difference there is that several of us started about a year or with the legislature when they decided that they wanted to take this on themselves and fix it for us. I doubt that that will happen again, but that's where this whole thing started. So, you know, I can't stress enough the need to understand the output from the input you gave FCS and what it means to the region as a whole to be able to move some of the money forward. That's Steve's two cents.
Yes, from my perspective, again, thanks to FCS for all that really great work, really interesting, and thanks again to everybody around the table for helping provide all that information to make that analysis happen. I know Nikki is here from Capital Crossroads, and Jean, you know, with Capital Crossroads, our regional vision plan, one of the capitals is the governance capital, and I know a number of you around the table have been part of that as well, too, and that's really to look at what can we do as a region to find opportunities to work closer together on a wide range of different things, and we've had some really nice successes, and I think this really is a perfect example of that. But when I hear those numbers, $327 million in regional net benefit, if we get this right, that's pretty exciting, right? Again, the hard part is definitely in the details, and to me, in looking at that, you know, the key is how do we find a way to share those benefits more widely. But there's definitely ways within there, it looks like, to create that equalization. The hard part's the devil's in the details, right? And to really look at those numbers and to reach your communities, to work with Jason and his team to really understand what that means, and then to evaluate those options for equalization, right? It looks like there's lots of different options to make that work, and then to realize those values of shared governance and the other reduction of redundancies to create those efficiencies and cost savings for each of us collective, for the region collectively, and for each of us within our own community. So it seems to me there's a deal in there if we work, continue to work together and find that. But again, it's going to take a lot of hard work. And I think it's, I guess, from the partnership's perspective, is to really continue to all of us to understand the importance of thinking and acting as a region. You know, collectively, we've got a history of working together on big ideas, taking on big challenges, not because it's easy, but because it's worth it in the end. So again, lots of work in front of us, but very exciting data today. excited to continue to move forward and hopefully find a deal. So that's my concluding remarks, and I don't know if anyone has any other comments.
I've got one comment. We've all come together on so many different issues, as Jay just pointed out. But this one, I think we've started, some of us, as was pointed out, 17 months ago. Some of us started even before that, because at the end of the day, on a wide variety of issues, often, especially in a commodity like water, we want to know whether we're going to have the quantity we need, we want to know whether we're going to have the quality we need. We all have to get comfortable with the pricing we need, and there's a redundancy factor that all of us want to feel comfortable with under any and all circumstances. And I think the only way we're going to get there is all of us working together to make that happen. And we've been successful at doing it in so many areas. I hope that we can continue and find a way to make this work and satisfy not only us today, but our whole region for the next 50 or 100 years. So that's all I'd say.
Question. At the beginning there, Jason, you talked about the next steps, this and that. So there's going to be, this moves ahead, executive committee or whatever, and then there's going to be somebody that's going to come out, individual councils, and or not, or that's what I thought I saw up there, or you said should happen.
Well, let's be clear on
that. Did you see that?
Yeah.
The leaders are here that should be able to tap Jason. We think they are in this room. They are making themselves available to come and to give you all of the details behind your communities in this presentation. So that responsibility is on all of us to ensure that we share with our city councils, with our water boards, with all the individuals that need to have this information. And they are available to us.
Yeah, and just maybe to be more clear, the individual meetings that we've had so far, we've done by web conference. So we can sit there and look at what we're talking about, and I won't necessarily be there in person.
Because, like, you know, I've been involved in all this, but then you get one slide, and that's difficult just to get all the other people that got to make a decision to say, oh, yeah, yes or no.
You'll have other information if you want to know.
Yeah.
Sure. So
that's why I think it's important to get a hold of them to get that information that goes with that slide. But I would also suggest that everyone begins to approach this subject with the boards and councils to get feedback from them, because those boards and councils may provide a question or something to bring back to the executive committee as far as next steps. We will be looking at a timeline. We don't have a timeline yet. But so there's, like I said, the heavy lifting is just starting. It starts with this group making sure they're comfortable with the details that have been provided, and getting the details that they don't have, and then getting with the councils and boards.
Jason, will you be giving the board the file, part one file, and should be getting it out later today? Or?
Yes.
Got it right here.
Andy's going to come.
Got a very small thumb drive.
And Lauren, would you review where that will be posted? Mm-hmm.
Yes, it is posted in the Board of Trustees tab under Des Moines Waterworks' website, under West Des Moines Waterworks' website, under Board of Trustees, Urban Daily Utilities tab, Board of Trustees information, and then also the CERDWIC website. So four places.
The thumb drive is the PowerPoint from today,
yes.
As
yes.
Opposed to the underlying data.
Yes.
Right.
And how do we go about looking at the underlying data?
We are in the process of still packaging it all up in a way that
it will be available.
But we will
once we thumb drive or whatever.
Yeah, we are trying to make sure that we can transmit it and still have everything play nicely together.
There's a large number of files that all like a web connect together, and we want to make sure that transfers correctly.
Web,
so
that sounds nice.
Yeah, it does.
Grass nest.
You know.
So like Bill said, that would be the question to get a hold of that.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
I guess. And what we would, suggest is that reviewing that, with us with a, conference call would be helpful. We think,
I agree.
Understanding it.
Yeah.
So.
We've been really deep in this for a while, so we would love to walk through it with you all. I know that those one slides per isn't enough in a lot of cases. So, yeah.
As we're still here as a group, is there anything where we're from the group from what they've seen today or what they didn't see today that should be taken back to the executive committee? Any thoughts or everybody still just fantastic what came out? Or...
Thank you to FCS for all of the work and the diligence. Getting us this far.
Thank you.
It's our pleasure. Yeah. We're happy to have all of us here. I'm happy to have all of us here, so I don't have to answer all the questions.